Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
If you're a regular listener to Here and Now, you know Jill Schlesinger, the CBS News business analyst who joins us each week in our business segment. Jill is a financial journalist, but also a certified financial planner. She's had a lot of experience helping other people with their money, and she's noticed that many of them are making a lot of mistakes. So she's written a book, which is out today. It's called The Dumb Things Smart People Do With Their Money, 13 Ways to Right Your Financial Wrongs. And Jill joins us now to talk about it. Jill, you write about your own mistakes in this book. How is it possible that Jill Schlesinger got something wrong with money?
Because I am a human being, sadly, and I am programmed to do some things that are wrong. And one of the reasons I wanted to talk about the things that I have done is to acknowledge that there's nobody who escapes being a human being. And so for me, the classic mistake that I can talk about is about market timing. After the tech bubble burst, I had been kind of smart slash lucky to get out before a lot of the damage was done.
You and Mark Cuban together.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're close, so that makes sense. But I was, you know, in retrospect, I kind of think that I was able to say, oh, I was really smart about that. Then I wrote about it and how smart I was in the local papers and got some press around it. And then I was just waiting for that perfect moment to get back in.
And you missed the rebound.
I missed a good chunk of it, and it was brutal. People would write into me and say, hey, Smarty Pants, what do you think now? And I had to basically a year later say, you're right, I was wrong. I mean, I was right on the way in, but it's so hard to get two parts right in a market timing decision.
So the lesson is don't try to time the market.
Absolutely. And you know, frankly, had I just stuck with a diversified portfolio and rebalanced along the way, I probably would have been just fine. I was a wimp, okay? So I was never going to be 100% in tech stocks. That's just never going to be me. And, you know, part of that wimpiness is really instructive because I was wimpy because my dad was a huge risk taker.
Okay, let's talk about your dad. Your dad was a trader on the American Stock Exchange. And in 1982, he made a big mistake that you remember as a kid that stuck with you all along the way. What happened?
Well, my dad was an options trader early on when options came onto the New York marketplace from Chicago. And my dad bet that this one company would not go below a certain price, would not go above a certain price. The problem is that the company he got involved with was subject to a takeover. It blew up on the upside and he went broke. And so I remember our trip to California, whereby my dad said, there is $5,000 left in my trading account. We're going to go to California. It was a miserable trip. It rained the entire time as we were driving down the Pacific Coast Highway.
Couldn't have gotten any worse.
And I think – I actually asked my mother this. I think that actually my dad started smoking again during that trip.
So actually that gets to one of the really interesting things in this book, which is – why is it that what happens to us when we're little matters so much in terms of the financial decisions that we make?
You know, I learned this lesson when I was a financial planner, you know, 15, 20 years ago. And I would notice that a certain type of client would come in, maybe somebody who grew up not dirt poor, but not with like major league means and feeling like I wanted to give my kids more than I had. But to the extreme, what they often did was they indulged their kids and enabled their adult children so that their adult children really couldn't figure out how to manage their own financial lives. And conversely, there are those who grow up really coming out of maybe an immigrant experience where they're so trapped by these fears around money that they use money as a way to control their families and also to essentially prevent the next generation from sort of getting too big for their britches. And so you can really see the damage done intergenerationally.
So what is your advice then to parents about the best strategy for raising your kids so that they, you know, appreciate the money that they have or don't have and they know what to do with it?
I think that having a certain amount of openness is good. And I think also just sort of coming clean with yourself about what your money issues are. So if you had a controlling mom who never let you spend a dime, you know that you might have a propensity to indulge your child and try to work against that and talk about that. And if you're a single parent, it's a little bit harder. You don't have a foil to bounce this idea off of. But if you are co-partnering and parenting, it's so important to help you both balance the messaging you're giving to your kids and making sure that you're clear. Hey, you know what? This is what we can afford for college. We'd love it if we could write a check to ABC University and it costs $80,000 a year. But this family can't do that. And you're not allowed to actually make that call on the eve when all the applications are due. Mm-hmm. You've got to start these conversations earlier. So it's really modulating yourself and your behavior and making sure that you are really delivering the right messages to the kids.
I want to zip through a couple of the things that come up in this book just to give people a sense. Number one, you say gold, bad investment, always. Why?
Because I'm a former gold trader and I used to make money off of all of you people who bought gold. So a couple of things. When you see anything advertised really late at night when you have insomnia, it's probably a pretty good idea to avoid that. You know, and so I put gold in that category, reverse mortgages in that category. I mean, every washed up BC star ends up being in these commercials. One of the biggest problems with gold is if you're going to buy physical gold, it's really hard to unload it and it's expensive and you don't know what you're doing, and commodities are really volatile.
When your friend says to you, I've got a great investment, a great new financial product you should really pay attention to, you say?
Yellow flag. Because do not buy a investment that you can't understand. I mean, frankly, if you can't understand it easily within a 5-minute description or someone says, please read this 180-page prospectus, you will understand more, then you can avoid it. And you can always listen to the butterfly in your belly or get a second opinion and really be cautious, because this is an industry that is wonderful in terms of giving people opportunities, but it's also the dark side where you have some unscrupulous folks who are selling stuff just to sell it, not because it's best for you.
When does it make sense to get a financial advisor to help you?
I would say that there are a lot of people who seek financial advice when really they don't need it. So you know what your big three goals really need to be, which is I've got to pay off that consumer debt. I've got to pay down those student loans. I've got to have my emergency reserve fund. And I've got to start using some sort of retirement plan. If you don't have those three things, there's no reason to go to a financial planner. You can buy insurance online. It's very easy to do the calculations. But if you have a complicated financial life, or if you and your spouse are fighting a lot about money, or if you are up at night worried about money, those may be some of the signs that you need some financial help. And just a plug here, please get help from an advisor or a professional who is held to something called the fiduciary standard. That means they have to act in your best interest, not his or hers or the firm's.
You talk in this book about something that you love, and I'm actually surprised to hear this, but you love insurance.
We
should all care about insurance. Maybe more than we do.
Well, let me say this. There is no better product that can prove the law of large numbers and the ability to spread out risk. I mean, look, the big problem about insurance, whether it's disability, long-term care, life, health, any of these things, is that in the moment you're like, I feel great. I don't need insurance. Mm-hmm. Except when you don't. And so I tell lots of stories about people who really shoot themselves in the foot because they have not purchased insurance.
I was just talking to a friend who had not purchased homeowner's insurance. His mother left the water running. It dripped down many floors, destroyed a lot of stuff in the apartments below, and he had to pay out of pocket.
So the funny thing is, if your friend had a mortgage, the mortgage company would require some coverage. Once that mortgage is gone, you're left to your own devices. And some of our devices are not actually thinking about the worst case scenario. I think that in many times, if you can think about the worst and cover that potential liability, wow, it's so great. Then you can just push it aside and say, I've got that covered. I hopefully will never need to make a claim.
I want to finally ask you about something that, you know, some of our listeners may be listening to this and saying, you know, I'm really good. I think about all this stuff. I pay a lot of attention to my finances. You point out that actually you need to be careful not to spend too much time focused. Don't be checking your balances all the time.
I think that there is a little bit of a trap that smart people fall into, and it's twofold. One is that I know so much about what I know that I could probably conquer this thing called my financial life. And there's really no other profession that's like that. I don't think, oh, I've watched Law and Order a lot so I can go be an attorney or, you know, I'm not going to be a doctor. But in the financial world, because it's so accessible, a lot of smart people think they can do it themselves, but they don't have the emotional wherewithal to really be able to do it. And conversely, even if you can do it, if you are obsessing about it, that's a really bad situation. And I don't think it's really helpful for people to be checking their retirement balances every day. And certainly amid crazy volatile days, we've talked about this when I've been on the show, that's about the worst time to make a financial decision. So you've got to put some guardrails up and some boundaries and not get yourself so nuts about your money.
Someone once said to me, one of the best things about having money is the ability to not think or care about it.
I think that that's true. I think that the sad part for me is after listening to thousands and thousands of people on my own radio show and podcast and actually giving financial advice is that sometimes people squander that unbelievable opportunity. They have money and they're still nuts about it. And so I hope in this book, what I'm sort of giving you the gift of is take yourself off the hook, relax. It's kind of going to be okay. You do have enough. Just try to avoid these things and you should be just fine.
Jill Schlesinger, author of The Dumb Things Smart People Do With Their Money, 13 Ways to Right Your Financial Wrongs, and regular guest here on Here and Now. Jill, thanks as always.